Happy Memorial Day. It is now after midnight. I am the Solemn Monster. This is your AEW Dynamite, or I don't even know what show it is. AEW Double or Nothing 2021 review. I hope you're all still awake. I'm going to try to get through this as quickly as I can. I promise you, a long show tonight, but a really fun show overall. Some questionable results from tonight's pay-per-view and a couple of the matches. But on the whole, I had a lot of fun watching the show tonight, and I got to tell you, it was great being back at Daly's Place at full capacity with people right there at ringside, all over the building, hot as can be. Not for every match, unfortunately, but on the whole, I thought this was a very, very good show. So I think the crowd was really the story of the night. Just a lot of fun, you know, being back. It felt like old times, and it really shows you how much energy can be added to a show by a really hot crowd, which kind of died a little bit in the middle, and I blame it on Cody. That's really where it started. They kind of lost the crowd. It took them a while to get the crowd back into it, but great matches up and down the card, and it started on the buy-in pre-show. And I have to show a lot of love for this match. This was the NWA Women's Championship match with Serena Deeb defending against Riho, the first ever AEW Women's Champion. They had the sun setting at Daly's Place. It was still light outside. The sun was going down, made for a nice atmosphere. These two, I thought, had a fantastic opener, even better than the match they had back in February when they had that tournament match on Dynamite. That was a match, of course, that Riho won. This time, Serena goes over, retains her title. And I was going to get into a lot of some of the sequences that I highlighted in this match, but for the sake of moving things along a little bit here, I'll cut some of that out. We had Riho trying to fight off of a Serena Deeb attack late in the match. Deeb hit a dragon screw. She had been working over Riho's knee. That was really the story of the match, working over the knee, trying to wear her down. Riho fought out of the Deeb Tox, which is one of Serena's signature moves. Used the Japanese clutch for a near fall. And Serena was smashing Riho's knee repeatedly into the canvas over and over and over again. Finally locked on the Serenity Lock. There was nowhere for Riho to go. And she tapped out. Serena picks up the submission win. An excellent start to the night. The people were amped. And you would expect they would be anyway because it was the opening match. But even still, whether it was the opening match or the third, fourth, or fifth match on the card, the people, I think, would have been up for this no matter what. This was better than the Women's Championship match later in the night. By, like, a lot. So, kudos to both women. I thought this was great. And you know what? It's a feather in Billy Corgan's cap. That two of the best female performers that we've seen on AEW television recently are two of his signed performers. Or at least Serena. See, I don't know Serena. Is Serena still under, technically under NWA contract, or did she sign an AEW contract? Because I always forget if she's the NWA champion, but is she still under contract to them, or is she under contract to AEW? Because I still look at her as an NWA talent. She may not be, but as the NWA Women's Champion, Thunder Rosa is still under contract to the NWA. It's a real feather in their cap, you know, that they really are two of the best female performers that they have routinely on AEW programming. So, great match. Check it out if you missed it. But we move on. We move on to the pay-per-view. Okay, I'm being told that Serena has been AEW for a while. I forget sometimes. I thought that might be the case. But they're lucky to have her. They are lucky to have her. WWE had her as a coach. AEW has her in the ring. And they're better off for it. Pay-per-view opened with Brian Cage against Hangman Adam Page. Cage and Page opening the pay-per-view. Gigantic pop for Hangman. Anybody who forgot how over he was in front of crowds, you were reminded of this tonight. I can't tell you how many messages I get from people sometimes on the Dynamite streams. Oh, you know, Hangman's cooled off. They've got him associated with the Dark Order, the Dork Order, and you know, what went wrong with Hangman? Nothing went wrong with Hangman. It's just that he was in this lull. There was nothing wrong with him. It wasn't like he wasn't over anymore. He just wasn't featured in any kind of prominent feud or program. But it was always a matter of kind of waiting until they get back on the road, waiting until they get back in front of people, because he is one of the most over people on that entire roster. And you saw why tonight. You saw the way the people reacted to him when he walked out. He's going to be just fine. And the match that he had with Brian Cage tonight, great stuff. So his one singles loss this year came at the hands of Cage. He was looking to avenge that loss here at Double or Nothing. Taz was on commentary. He was not thrilled about his boy, Cage, wanting to go it alone. He did not want any members of Team Taz at ringside to help him. So Cage powerbombed Page, spine first, into the ring post outside early on. Cage was doing curls with Hangman in the ring. Like he was a 30-pound weight off the rack at the gym. Went for a fall-away slam. And Hangman countered that into a crucifix bomb for a near fall. Hangman clothesline Cage out to the floor. Both men go out. Hangman hits the Orihara moonsault off the top rope down to the floor. Page tried for a Rana off the top rope. Cage held on. He muscled him up, powerbombed him all the way down. Or he went for a powerbomb, but on the way down, Hangman reversed it, took him over. Cage hit a one-arm neck breaker for a near fall. Suplexed Hangman from the ring onto the ramp. Cage tried for a buckshot lariat. Brian Cage went for Hangman's finisher. It did not work out. Hangman caught him, hit an F5 for a two count. Cage hit a German, power bomb, buckle bomb. Hangman, though, gets a jackknife pin for a near fall. Cage hit a spinning liger bomb. Anyway, we get to Ricky Starks and Hook. Ricky Starks and Hook made an appearance. They came out, and Ricky slid the FTW belt into the ring. And Cage looks down, he sees his FTW title, and he immediately tosses it back outside the ring. He doesn't want to use it. He doesn't want their help. And Ricky Starks is incredulous. He cannot believe this. What are you doing? He has been rebuffed. Cage said he was going to go this match all by himself, and he wanted to go it alone. He did not want any help. Taz was beside himself. He couldn't understand this. And as it turned out, he should have taken the championship belt when it was offered to him, because Hangman set up for the buckshot lariat. He connects for the 1-2-3 and picks up the win. So there is trouble in Team Taz, which we've kind of known for a while, but it was on display here. Cage got up in Ricky Starks' face. Starks points to his neck. He's pointing to his fractured neck. Don't touch me. I'm hurt. So Cage shoves Hook instead, and he storms to the back. Excellent opener to the main card. And the win that really should begin the slow journey for Hangman to a world title match with Kenny Omega later this year. The only question is, do they do it at All Out in Chicago, or do they hold off until Full Gear in St. Louis in November? But one of those two pay-per-views will be headlined by Hangman Page against Kenny Omega for the AEW World title. That is where Hangman takes the title. So all the people who were so worried about, oh, he's cooled off too much, he's a cold act, what happened to Hangman? Hangman's going to be fine. Hangman is going to be just fine. But now these two guys are knotted up at one win apiece. So I would have to expect that they were going to get one more match between these two, probably on Dynamite, sometime in the next few weeks. We had Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston challenging the Young Bucks with Don Callis on commentary for the AEW tag team titles. Moxley and Kingston come out through the crowd to Wild Thing. Crowd sings along. A lot of fun. Thought that entrance was a lot of fun. Kingston had this giant smile on his face. Like this like cheesy grin. He was so happy. And then you remember that Eddie Kingston didn't debut in AEW until July of last year, when they were in the middle of all the pandemic shows. So this was really I know they've gotten fans in Daly's place to a certain degree in recent months, but nothing like this. This really was his first time in front of an AEW crowd of this size. And they gave him a very respectful, very positive ovation, and he just looked so happy. Like he was having the time of his life. They were chanting, Eddie, Eddie. So I felt happy for him. You could tell it was a moment that obviously meant a lot to him. Streamers shot off for the Young Bucks once they got into the ring. And as they were being blinded by streamers, Moxley and Kingston thought, you know what? This is a good chance to jump these two guys. So they jumped him and we were off to the races. Moxley and Kingston, they took out Brandon Cutler, who was at ringside. They took him out of the picture. And on we went. And it was a lot of the match really was John Moxley taking the abuse, building to a hot tag to Eddie Kingston. We did get a cameo here by Carl Anderson, who walked out on the entrance ramp. Doc Gallows tried to sneak up at ringside. Eddie Kingston saw him, dove off the apron, took him out. And Matt Jackson sprayed that cold spray into John Moxley's face. He smacked the aerosol can right against his head. That busted Moxley open. And before long, he was wearing the crimson mask. Covered in blood was John Moxley. Bucks hit an Indy Taker on Moxley on the ramp. Back inside, Matt Jackson was working over Moxley, punching the forehead, trying to open him up even more. And the Bucks were double-teaming Moxley. They did the Shield fist bump. They're mocking the Shield. Not only that, Matt Jackson did the old Roman Reigns pose that he used to do before he would do the triple powerbomb. So we had Matt Jackson mocking the tribal chief here on this show. It's going to upset all the WWE fans. All the diehard WWE fans and all the diehard AEW fans. I wish I could just take them, the ones that are like really at the extreme end of things. I wish I could just take them all and just lock them in a room. And then wake up the next morning and open the door and just see who's left standing. I wonder what I would find. Who do you think would be left standing? Would it be the WWE fans or would it be the AEW fans? They can take each other out for all I care. They're all nuts. Moxley builds up for the hot tag to Eddie Kingston, which big pop from the crowd. Kingston's working over both Bucks. He's going nuts, and he was doing the rapid-fire chops to the chest. Nick Jackson got blasted by a big boot, and then Eddie went to work on Matt Jackson. Nick super-kicked the back of Kingston's bad knee, went for a senton bomb. Kingston got the knees up, tagged in Moxley, who immediately ran into a pair of stereo super-kicks, and they went for more bang for your buck. Moxley fought out, locked on a rear naked choke. Nick rolled out of the choke. Matt Jackson hit a 450 for a two. Moxley then stopped the Meltzer driver attempt. Used one of the Bucks' Dior Jordan sneakers as a distraction. And as the referee, I think, was getting rid of the sneaker, Moxley went up top. He had another sneaker in his hand. They did a doomsday device. He hit the doomsday device with a sneaker. Nick Jackson broke up the near fall. So we skip here to the finish. Moxley is getting fired up. He's kicking out of moves left and right. Now he's firing up. And the Bucks hit him with double super kicks. Eddie Kingston tries to save him. He tries to get involved. The Bucks, though, kick his leg out from under. They kicked his leg out of his leg, as Owen Hart would say. Super kicked him. That took him out of the picture. And the Bucks proceeded to hit the BTE trigger to John Moxley, who kind of shrugged it off, and they proceeded to hit him with about three or four more BTE triggers. And that did the trick. Matt Jackson gets the pin on John Moxley to retain the tag team titles. And that kind of took the wind out of my sails. And I feel like it took the wind out of the sails of a lot of the fans that were in the building. Maybe Moxley is taking time off soon. You know, again, his wife is about to have a kid in the next, I think, two and a half weeks is when Renee is due. Maybe that played into why they lost here. Maybe he's going to disappear for a little bit. But I just thought that finish was kind of deflating. Probably because I was expecting a title change. I guess if you weren't expecting a title change, maybe you felt differently. I thought the finish was a little deflating. The match itself, though, I thought was excellent. The crowd badly wanted Eddie Kingston, I think, to get that win and to walk out with the tag team titles. And again, unless Moxley is going away, I really didn't see any reason not to give people the feel-good title change. You could always put the belts back on the Bucks in a few weeks or, you know, in a month or whenever you want. So that was a little disappointing, but the match itself I thought was excellent. So we were 3 for 3 so far. Going back to the pre-show, up to this point in the show, we were 3 for 3. Perfect record. And we got to the Casino Battle Royal with Paul White on commentary. You know Paul White. You know Paul White. Don't make me do it. The winner, of course, earns a future AEW World Championship match. Christian Cage started out with Matt Sydal, Dustin Rhodes, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Max Caster, who eliminated Sydal first. Caster was out next. Matt Hardy was out next. And he had Isaiah Cassidy with him of Private Party, who was not dressed to wrestle, although he ended up wrestling anyway in his suit. But they were laying in wait by the entranceway to the tunnel for the next person to come out. And that person turned out to be Preston Vance of the Dark Order, who fought them off. Nick Camarado was out next, followed by Luther dragging his partner Serpentico out. He threw his partner into the Battle Royal. He said, get in there. And he threw Serpentico into the ring, and within moments, Serpentico was already gone. So thanks for coming. Dustin eliminated Camarado and Preston Vance at the same time. Camarado climbed back up, whacked Dustin with his own cowbell. And that allowed Powerhouse Hobbs to eliminate Dustin Rhodes. That's what you get for bringing a fucking cowbell to the ring in a Battle Royal. Maybe he'll learn his lesson. Brian Pillman Jr., Griff Garrison were out next, followed by Colt Cabana wearing a Brody Lee jacket. It's too bad Brody Lee never had a chance to wrestle in front of a crowd like this. Anthony Bowens of the Acclaim was out next, followed by Penta El Cero Miedo. He was wearing Joker colors tonight. I was digging the color scheme. Purple, green. Although we had not yet gotten to the Joker entrant. The big mystery entrant, that was yet to come. Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy was out next. I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for Baltimore to play in front of a packed house. Everybody was chanting along. It's going to be fun watching Jungle Boy entrances now. You know what he should do? I guess maybe they couldn't do it in Daly's place, but at some point, depending on what building they're in, as the song plays, they should have him do the Tarzan swing. They should tie a rope and have him Tarzan swing, you know, not into the ring necessarily, but, you know, just kind of land in the aisle way and then walk to the ring. Or he can Tarzan swing to the ring. They could figure out a way to do that. I think that'd be a pretty cool entrance. I think Shawn Michaels did that once. In Your House, I think, right? The pay-per-view where he wrestled Owen Hart. Didn't he come in on a rope or something? If I remember. Anyway, the crowd clearly wanted Jungle Boy to win. If you were wondering who the favorite here was, wonder no more. Mark Quinn from Private Party was out next, followed by Aaron Solo from the Nightmare Factory, Evil Uno, and then Lee Johnson. Jungle Boy took Penta out over the top with a head scissors. Christian dumped out Will Hobbs, so it came down to Matt Hardy and Private Party, Christian Cage, Jungle Boy, and the mystery Joker entrant in the Battle Royal. Who would be the mystery man? I had thought that it would be Paul White, that he was going to get up from the commentary booth and he was going to go and enter himself into the Battle Royal. And then before the Battle Royal, we found out that QT Marshall has a wrist injury and he wasn't even going to be in the match. And I said, well, there goes my pick. Because the whole point was he enters, he eliminates QT Marshall. They've had some issues recently on Dark Elevation. So now I'm wondering, okay, who's it going to be? Right, we've heard so many different names thrown around. Andrade's name was thrown around. You know, who's going to be the Joker entrant? And the Joker entrant turned out to be Leo Rush. Now, I know that was an underwhelming pick for a lot of people, at least judging by some of the comments I saw here in the chat. You know, it's not a big name, but Leo Rush is very talented. Leo Rush has been crushing it recently in MLW. I don't know what his status is there, if he's, I guess, no longer with them. But if he's signed to AEW, I think he'll fit right in. He was flying all over that ring. It's hard to keep track of you know, what he's doing when he's in there. But Matt Hardy tried to eliminate him. Rush, like I said, was flying around all over the place, hit a springboard cutter on Hardy. He tried to eliminate Private Party. Both of them were out on the apron. Hardy ended up tossing Leo Rush out of the ring, and so adios, Leo Rush. Jungle Boy and Christian then eliminated Private Party, which left Matt Hardy alone with the two babyfaces. Matt Hardy tried to forge an alliance with Christian. You know, they got a lot of history together. All those TLC matches, you and me, come on, we gotta gang up on this kid. And Christian was sort of teasing that perhaps he would go with Matt. Ended up not doing that. He tossed Hardy out over the top rope. So it came down to Christian and Jungle Boy, which I liked. Because they were probably, aside from whoever the Joker entrant was going to be, the two most popular picks. When people gave their predictions, I had picked Christian to win. But I think it was really going to come down to Christian or Jungle Boy. And so when the Battle Royal comes down to those two, it's like the Royal Rumble this year. Coming down to Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley and Charlotte. I loved it. Why? Because it made for an unpredictable finish. Those were the obvious choices. So you really didn't know who was going to win. But clearly, Jungle Boy was the crowd favorite. So they had a little sequence back and forth. And in the end, Christian did get dumped out of the ring. He got backdropped out over the top rope to the floor. Jungle Boy picks up the win. He now has an AEW World title match coming his way. Marco Stunt, Luchasaurus came out to celebrate with him. Christian got back into the ring. He got back up in Jungle Boy's face. He was saying some stuff to him, you know, talking about make the most of the opportunity. He was hugging him. The crowd cheered. So that was a cool moment. It was the right person to win. You know, based on the crowd reaction and the fan reaction to Jungle Boy, clearly they were the one that, or he was the one they wanted to win. And it made for a great moment. And singing along to his song. And the other thing about it is, it was nice that they put over their guy. Jungle Boy's a young guy. He's got his whole career ahead of him. He's going to be a big star in AEW. Bigger than he is now. And when I think about who those guys are, who are those, that kind of core group of AEW guys that are young, popular, that they can build around, it's Jungle Boy, Hangman, Sammy Guevara, and Darby Allin. I think those are the main four that I think of. So it was cool that they used Christian in that spot to help get over Jungle Boy. So I like that. Jungle Boy, by the way, is going to be challenging Kenny Omega for the championship on Dynamite in 2 weeks. We now know when the match is going to happen. It will be on Dynamite in 2 weeks. We had the American Dream, baby. Cody Rhodes, one-on-one against Anthony Ogogo. This brought the show to a grinding halt. Unfortunately. Ogogo landed the punch to the midsection early in the match. Hit an angle slam. Ogogo went for another punch. Cody got him down, hooked his arms behind him, and floated over into the cattle mutilation. I have not seen a cattle mutilation in quite a while. So that was interesting. I don't think I've ever seen Cody use the cattle mutilation in a match. Cody went for a tope through the ropes. Ogogo reached up, punched him in the head. Back inside, he hit a German suplex. And a lariat turned Cody inside out for a near fall. So with the referee's attention diverted, QT Marshall, who was there, he was at ringside, he reached up, he punched Cody in the head. Arn Anderson does not like this, and Arn Anderson grabs a chair, and he chases QT Marshall up onto the ramp. Arn Anderson is ready to wreck some shit. He's not taking shit from anybody. So Ogogo got lacerated above the eye. The camera had cut away for a while. After he got hit, it cut away, and I'm thinking, boy, they're keeping the camera fixated on Cody for an awful long time. I wonder if when they cut back to Ogogo, he'll be bleeding. And sure enough, he obviously bladed. They cut back to him. He was bleeding above the eye. Ogogo hit a fireman's carry slam for a two count. skipping ahead here, Cody had gotten him in the figure four leg lock, and Agogo was trying to punch his way out of it. He reversed the pressure on the hold. Cody went for the crossroads. Agogo landed another body shot, though, went for a cover, but Cody's arm was under the ropes. Referee Paul Turner said, nope, can't count it. His arm is under the ropes, doesn't count. Agogo went for his governor's hammer, but Cody turned it into the vertebraker for the win. That scared the shit out of me. You know, again, Agogo is very green. He's very inexperienced. This was really his first big match. This was his first pay-per-view match. He's only been training, I think they said, for about 18 months. The vertebraker is a scary enough move. If you take it the wrong way, I mean, it could really end badly. So I didn't know how that was going to end. Thankfully, he landed okay, and Cody won with it. He got the pin. You know, this would have been okay as a television match. It really was nothing more than that. The first real come-down match of the pay-per-view. Like I said, this kind of grinded the show to a halt. The people just really were not into this. They were not reacting to this like they were everything else up to this point on the pay-per-view. And this is Cody Rhodes. Now, I don't want to hear that, you know, they're going to turn around and blame Anthony Agogo for it, because you knew what you were getting by putting Anthony Agogo in this match. This guy is not built up enough yet. It's way too soon. But it seemed like they were trying to get him over. And so it kind of boggles the mind that they did this match and they just had Cody beat him 1-2-3. You know, it's fine if Cody wants to work with some of his guys or some of these younger guys and try to help them get over. Best way to get over is to win. Cody would have lost nothing by losing this match. So outside of the fact that he was using his father's name for one night, I don't see why Cody had to win this match. Even though, again, Agogo has a ways to go-go when it comes to improving and learning. He's still very inexperienced, hasn't had very many matches. But I didn't agree with this outcome. Didn't have to happen this way. This should have been an Anthony Agogo win. Instead, it's a win for Cody Rhodes. Where he goes from here, you know, what's next for Cody, who knows? His programs and what they've had him doing all year, it's been so bizarre. I have no idea where you go from here. You could do another match, I guess. Maybe Agogo wins the next one. But I thought he should have won here. Agogo didn't look bad. He showed some flashes here. But he's still very new to this. We had Miro defending the TNT Championship against the Murder Hawk Monster, Lance Archer. They showed a replay of Miro taking a shot at Jake Roberts. AEW had a fan fest event yesterday. There was a weigh-in with Hikaru Shida and Britt Baker in the ring. While that was going on in the background, you see Miro throwing a punch, I think it was, at Jake Roberts, and Jake goes down. So Jake was not there at the start. He did come out, but he was not there at the beginning of this match. Miro came out second, Archer's already in the ring, and Archer does a crossbody out over the top onto the ramp. He immediately goes after Miro. They brawl around ringside. Archer puts him through a table at ringside with a spine buster. Archer tried to then pounce him while they were on the floor, tried to pounce him, I guess, into the barricade. Miro, though, catches him and sends him over the barricade. And Lance Archer is a big dude. And he gave this guy a belly-to-belly suplex over the barricade, wiped out a whole bunch of obviously planted fans in the front row. We had Archer walking the top rope, going for a moonsault. Miro avoided it, hit a Samoan drop for two. And then Jake Roberts, what they told us was his 66th birthday. I was going to say today, but technically now it's yesterday. So happy belated birthday to Jake the Snake Roberts. I think if you ask a lot of people, it's probably pretty shocking that Jake even made it to 66, given his history, given his past, given the way he has abused himself, when so many other wrestlers didn't even make it out of their 30s and 40s. It is nothing short of a miracle. A happy miracle. But a miracle all the same that Jake Roberts is even here to celebrate his 66th birthday. And not only is he here to celebrate his 66th birthday, but here he is live on pay-per-view. And he comes out with the snake bag. And he starts to, you know, he's going to take what is supposed to be, I guess, a snake out of the bag. Miro attacks him again, beats him down, takes the bag, and he chucks the bag, presumably with the snake inside, chucks it up the ramp. So I'm sure he'll be getting some angry messages from PETA. I already saw him on Twitter. He was kind of joking about PETA and all that. You'd be surprised. WWE got in a lot of trouble years ago when they did the angle with Jake and Earthquake, when Earthquake sat on Damien. It was all hamburger meat inside the bag, but of course, it was portrayed on TV like he sat on the snake and killed it. And boy, PETA and all the animal rights groups, they were all over them for that. So we'll see if AEW gets any blowback for it. I don't think Miro cares. But Miro went back on the attack, and he got chokeslammed by Lance Archer for two. Miro fought out of the blackout attempt. Archer surprised him, though, with a pounce. And getting back in the ring, Miro kicked the rope as Archer was getting back inside. He kicked the rope, so he kicked him low, basically. Hit a suplex and a thrust kick. Miro locked on the game over submission. He pulled all the way back until the referee called for the bell. And so the winner by ref stoppage, and still your TNT champion, Miro. This was not great. This was not one of Lance Archer's better matches. I thought Miro looked fine. Archer has had better days. This was not, I thought, a good showing for him. But Miro had to retain. I figured they were going to go to a time limit draw or a double count out or something, protect both guys, do a rematch. I still think we'll get a rematch, you know, even though he already won. Miro already won. There's really no reason for a rematch. I wouldn't mind seeing them run this match back again. I think they could do better. I think they could have a better match. I honestly think that they suffered a little bit from the reaction to the Cody match, which really took people out of it. But the match was disappointing. I would say, yeah, this is one of the matches I was looking forward to the most, and it was disappointing, but it was the right outcome. Again, Miro had to win this match. We got an advertisement. AEW is returning to Chicago Sunday, September 5th, for All Out. We already knew that Full Gear in November was going to be on November 6th in St. Louis. We now know that Chicago is going to once again host All Out. Hikaru Shida, Willie Urbina's favorite wrestler, defending her AEW Women's Championship against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. This dragged on longer than it needed to. Very messy. Until the final few minutes of the match, it was a great moment. In the end, it was the correct outcome. The match itself will not go down as one of the better AEW women's matches. I was far more impressed by that pre-show match with Serena Deeb and Riho. But it did get better when we got closer to the end of the match. Shida locked on the stretch muffler. Rebel distracted Shida, and she had her crutch. And so she wailed back. She was going to hit Shida with the crutch, and instead she inadvertently hit Britt Baker with the crutch right in front of the referee. The referee was not looking the other way. The referee was not distracted in any way. The referee saw all of this happen, and Rebel whacked her own woman with the crutch, and somehow this was not a disqualification. Now, I understand friendly fire, but that shouldn't matter. She still hit the woman head-on with a crutch. She still hit her with a foreign object. I mean, look, I'm glad we didn't get a cheap DQ. I'm just saying. I point out this common sense bullshit in WWE all the time. AEW has to be held to the same standard. It was very blatant. But this was apparently not a disqualification. I know we don't get disqualifications very often in AEW. In fact, one of the only times I can remember is, I think it was one of the falls in the Iron Man match that we had on Dynamite between Pac and Kenny Omega, right? Wasn't one of the falls a DQ, I believe? But you don't see them very often. At least don't make it so blatant. That's all I ask. So she got whacked with the crutch, and I kind of shrieked because I thought, oh my God, they think that Britt Baker winning is too predictable, and they're going to have Sheeta go over, but Britt Baker kicked out. And Sheeta hit a pretty lousy-looking Falcon Arrow for a near fall. So the referee ejected Rebel from ringside, so she went away. Britt Baker used the distraction to hit a curb stomp onto the title belt. Great near fall. Here's where things actually got good, really good here at the very end. This was a great near fall. She went for lockjaw. Sheeta rolled out of it. Sheeta came back with a jumping knee in the Tamashii for another close near fall. Britt Baker finally got the lockjaw on. She had tried three or four different times in this match, and she finally got the hold applied, and she had no choice. The champion had no choice but to tap out, and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, is your new AEW Women's Champion, the second most predictable outcome of any match going into this show, the only other one being the world title. I think most people would have said that she was going to end up with the championship. It only made sense. Sheeta had a hell of a run, one full year plus as the AEW Women's Champion, but that run has come to an end. And the crowd popped huge. The crowd wanted to see Britt Baker win, even though she was the heel. They popped huge, big babyface pop for her winning this match. And the best moment here, the best part of this whole thing, was when the match was over, Tony Schiavone left the announce desk to go walk over to the rampway. And he waited for Britt Baker to come down the ramp towards the tunnel. I thought he was going to interview her. I thought he was going to, you know, have the mic and she was going to cut a promo. But there was no promo. They hugged. They embraced. Because, you know, on television and on social media, they're always, you know, talking about what best friends they are. And they are. They're very good friends. They've become very good friends in real life. They enjoy working together. But it was a real moment. You know, they just shared an embrace. And Schiavone was saying something to her, probably congratulating her. And you could tell it meant a lot to her. I thought that was a really cool moment. Because of how linked up on TV they've been, it was one of those genuine moments where I think he was just really happy to see her finally win the big one. And I was glad that they aired that on TV. I thought that was a very cool moment. But now the reign of DMD can begin. Even though this was not one of her better matches. This was not, for example, the Lights Out match, which was far more violent, but this was not the Lights Out match with Thunder Rosa. This was not some of the other matches that Britt Baker has had that I thought were much better than this. But in the end, we got to the destination. That's all that matters. We had Sting and Darby Allin taking on Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. I thought this match was a lot of fun. I enjoyed this match. More than I expected to. Darby hit the wildest tope suicida that I've ever fucking seen in my life. This guy, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about his body. He doesn't care where he lands. He just, I mean, I can't even explain like how he landed. He just threw himself out of the ring at 65 miles an hour. Collided with Ethan Page outside, right in front of what Excalibur said were Darby's brothers, his family, who was in the front row. Allin took out Page with a tope before the bell, like I said. Sky suplexed Sting on the ramp. Sting popped right back up. He popped right back up while Scorpio Sky was gloating on the ramp. And Sting is just standing behind him, burning a hole through him, and Scorpio Sky has that look on his face like, he's behind me, right? And he turns around, and Sting kind of shoved him off the ramp, down onto his partner down below, and then Sting dives off the ramp, and, you know, thankfully they caught him, and takes this, for him, I mean, the guy's 62 years old, takes this big bump off the stage. They protect him all the way down. Now he's getting you still got it chance. I thought that was cool. Believe me, the last thing these guys wanted to do is be responsible for the demise of Sting. They were going to take care of this guy if it meant putting their own body at risk. They were not going to let anything happen. You know, Scorpio Sky had joked on a podcast that he got a text from a friend of his in WWE. I mentioned this on the prediction stream I did the other day. And this person was like, bro, Sting was my favorite as a kid. Don't hurt him. Had to be Seth Rollins. Had to be Seth Rollins. Don't hurt him, bro. I don't want to go. I don't want to see that happen again, bro. Don't do that. Protect him. And they did. They protected him. So the heels were beating down Darby. They were tossing him all over the place. They were taunting Sting on the apron. Darby finally got the hot tag. Aubrey Edwards, though, did not see it. So she forced Sting back out onto the apron. And Ethan Page press slammed Darby out of the ring. Right onto Darby's family. His brothers in the front row. This was like Spike Dudley. Only not as far as Bam Bam threw him in ECW. But this is a pretty crazy spot. Darby wiped out his whole family in the front row. Sting goes over to check on him, and Darby ends up making it back into the ring just in the nick of time. So Ethan Page goes for the Ego's Edge. Allen instead locks on a sleeper, hits the flipping stunner. That allows him to reach Sting for the tag. And Sting is running wild. He's hitting clotheslines. He hits a stinger splash on both men. It's a code red. The first time in Sting's career I have ever seen Sting hit a code red. Now, we've seen Dustin Rhodes do it. I've seen Ricky Morton do it. In fact, I called a Ricky Morton match in House of Glory, where I'm pretty sure, if I remember, he hit a fucking code red. But I have never seen Sting hit a code red before. 62 years old, this guy's hitting a code red. Now, you know, it wasn't the best looking code red, but the fact that he hit it, it's pretty incredible stuff. For Sting, it was incredible to see. Got a two count only. Darby went to the top rope. Sky took him down. Ethan Page attacked Sting from behind. Page hit an inverted Ego's Edge and sent Darby Allin down onto his partner. He came crashing down onto Sting's ribs. Allin, though, fought out of whatever the next thing was that Ethan was attempting. Sting locked on the Scorpion Deathlock. At the same time, Darby, who was the legal man, he applied a Fujiwara armbar to poor Ethan Page, who's already locked in this Scorpion Deathlock. In comes Scorpio Sky, and Scorpio Sky slaps the heel hook on Darby. Now, Page and Darby, who were both in submission holds, are face-to-face, and now they start clawing at each other. They're gouging each other's eyes. They're smacking each other in the face. And finally, the referee gets the illegal men out of the ring. Sting and Scorpio, they tag in legally. They exchange right hands. Scorpio tries to chop down Sting. Sting no-sells it. No selling the chops. He does the pounding of the chest. Everyone is getting into this big Sting comeback here like it's 1989. Scorpio went for a slingshot cutter. Sting countered into the Scorpion Death Drop for the win. Awesome finish. Awesome finish. So you got to picture it in your head. Here's Scorpio Sky on the apron. He's flipping into the ring to do this cutter. And in one motion, Sting turns it into a Scorpion Death Drop. That was a fucking great finish. And Sting gets the 1-2-3. Sting looked damn good at 62 with spinal stenosis. He looked really good in there. He was moving around well. You know, he didn't look too winded or anything. And he didn't just do a couple of moves. I mean, he was pretty well involved in this match. It wasn't like Darby was in there for 95% of the match. So I thought he had a really good showing for himself. Wins his first live match in the ring in 6 years. That was his first in-ring match in front of an audience. I guess September it'll be a full 6 years. It's a long time. And he picks up the W. And now I'm just wondering, you know, are we going to see Sting and Darby be the ones to take the tag team titles from the Young Bucks? Or at least are they building to a match between the Bucks, Sting and Darby? Is that where this is going? Sting and Darby have now won two matches. One cinematic, one non-cinematic. They did not put the belts on Moxley and Kingston. There is no obvious team on the horizon that you can point to and say, ah, okay, they're the ones that are being groomed to become the tag team champions. Now, maybe that could be Santana and Ortiz. You know, they're not really building to that yet. Maybe coming out of this pay-per-view, they will. But it makes me wonder if that's where we may be headed. Maybe it all out. Maybe the big tag team title match is going to be Sting and Darby against Matt and Nick Jackson. Could be. I just throw that out there as an idea. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sold on winning the belts on them, you know, Sting and Darby as the champions necessarily. But again, it just feels to me like maybe they're building up to that match. What they were building up to, though, was our next match, which was a triple threat match for the AEW World Championship. Kenny Omega defending against Orange Cassidy and Pac. Or as Big Show said in the video, package or package, called him Pac. That's what I used to call him until I was corrected. It's Pac. So we call him Pac. Omega walked out draped in gold, AEW title around his waist, TNA title strapped around his upper body, Impact World title in one hand, AAA Mega title in the other. Great visual. He is the belt collector. It's moments like this where you really, it really kind of stands out, and it just makes for this great visual. Whatever you may think of the individual titles, why is there an Impact title and a TNA title? Who the fuck knows? But he comes out there looking like a king when he walks out to the ring. For a match where you knew that Omega was not going to lose the championship, I will say they ended up with an incredible number of near falls in this match where the fans were hanging on to every single near fall. And it felt like they honestly believed that they might see a title change. They found a way to convince people that, you know, at least three or four or five different times in this match, people thought that that was going to be the finish and that Kenny Omega was going to lose the championship. And that's not an easy thing to do, because I think coming into this match, almost nobody would have expected that Kenny Omega was going to lose this championship. So kudos to them for at least getting people to believe in some of those cases that he might actually walk out without the belt. Omega avoided a black arrow at one point, set Pac up for the one-winged angel, but Pac locked on the brutalizer, orange punch to Pac, and the beach break on Omega, tremendous near fall. Don Callis left the commentary table at that point. He saw that Kenny was in trouble, and he audibly yelled, "Shit," before throwing his headset down and running down to the ring to interfere. Cassidy hit the beach break on Pac. Don Callis pulled the referee, Bryce Remsburg, out of the ring. Tremendous heel heat for Callis for that. Cassidy went to the top rope, fought off Omega. Pac caught the diving DDT, locked on the brutalizer. Omega tried to break up the hold, but Pac would not let go. So Kenny Omega attacked the referee, because why not? It's no disqualification. You may as well. Laid out Pac with each one of his belts, one by one, telling Don Callis to bring the belts in. He would hit Pac, then he would hit Pac again and again. Cassidy popped up, took out Omega with an orange punch. Aubrey Edwards ran down to count the pin, but Omega kicked out at two and rolled him over with a crucifix pin to retain the championship. I thought they had an excellent match. I thought the match was great. I thought that it was a little, probably a few minutes longer than it needed to be. So there's one thing I would have done. I would have cut this match down by about 5 or 6 minutes probably. But I thought this was great stuff. Predictable, but I thought this was great stuff. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to introduce the newest analyst for AEW, who's going to be doing the analyst role, the color commentary role, starting August 13th when their new show Rampage debuts at 10 p.m. on TNT. And that new person is the world's strongest man. Mark Henry is now All Elite. That's right, Busted Open's own. Mark Henry, WWE Hall of Famer. Mark Henry is going to be the new analyst on Rampage. They still have not announced who the play-by-play guy is going to be. I would love to see them bring in Amaro Rinaldo for that role. Not Tony Schiavone. I mean, Tony Schiavone is spread thin enough as it is. And definitely we don't need JR on Rampage. This was not, by the way, one of JR's best nights. I'll just leave it at that. But Mark Henry, interesting pickup there. Didn't say anything about him getting in the ring or anything. He's just an analyst, so like Paul White. But he's talked openly on Busted Open Radio about how he's dropped a lot of weight, Mark Henry has, and he wants to have a return match. Didn't say where, didn't say against who. I hope it's not against Big Show, but it wouldn't shock me at some point to see Mark Henry in an AEW ring. He's that adamant about getting back in the ring for one more match. It's pretty likely that we'll see it. But he will be on Rampage starting in August. And then it was time for the Stadium Stampede. Stadium Stampede 2. With the Inner Circle against the Pinnacle. If the Inner Circle loses, they must disband forever. You know how forever is in pro wrestling. Forever usually is about 7 months. On average, it's about how long forever lasts. So they had a ring on the field again, just like last year. I guess all the people in Daly's place were watching on the Titantron, or not Titantron, but on the Jumbotron. I guess they were watching all of this. MJF is cutting a promo on the football field, and they were next door on TIAA Field, home of the Jaguars. And there's this long white stretch limousine. And MJF is just standing there cutting a promo on Jericho in the Inner Circle. All of a sudden, the Inner Circle enters, and MJF makes a beeline back into the limo, locks himself inside. And we see that it was a diversion, because here comes another car, another vehicle, onto the football field with the rest of the Pinnacle. And the Inner Circle comes after them, and the brawl begins. MJF eventually exits the limo, doesn't realize, though, that Chris Jericho is standing there waiting for him. They have a little stare down. I think MJF calls him a piece of shit. Bring it on. So they start going at it. MJF then runs away. He starts running towards the locker room area at TIAA Field. And what ended up happening here, and I don't know how much of this was live, if all of this may have been live. My understanding is that there was very little, if anything, that was taped in advance. So it may have been a case where the majority of what we saw tonight before they got into Daly's place was in fact happening live. I mean, don't hold me to that, but that was my impression anyway, coming into the show tonight. But they filmed it almost cinematically in a way, where they would cut back and forth to different rooms and different levels in the stadium, and we'd have Jericho and MJF, right, for a few minutes, and then there'd be a big bump, and then they would cut to Wardlow and Jake Hager in a different part of the stadium, and then they would cut to Sammy Guevara and Sean Spears, and back and forth we went, and that's basically how they filmed the match. So we got to focus on each of these battles that were all going on simultaneously, and that was probably the biggest difference in how they filmed this relative to how they did the Stadium Stampede last year, which was taped. Took them about 12 hours to tape it overnight. So that was filmed very differently than this was. And there was a little less comedy. I mean, there were definitely some comedic spots in this match, but one thing I liked, there wasn't as much of an emphasis on the comedy aspect of it, because this is a serious feud. This is supposed to be a serious feud. You don't want to overwhelm it with comedy, ha-ha. And there was definitely less of that this year than there was last year, so that's another thing I liked about this. But MJF runs to the back, and they end up brawling around back there. MJF throws some hot coffee on Jericho. Jericho comes back with a pair of cookie sheets. They brawl into another room where Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer is standing there having a conversation. He was talking to his assistant coach, Charlie Strong. All of a sudden, they look over and they see Jericho and MJF have brawled into the room. And Jericho grabs a laptop and he destroys the laptop across MJF's back. And as they go to leave the room to brawl into the next room, Jericho turns to Coach Meyer and says, "Have a good season." All Coach Meyer could say is, "Holy shit." That was his response to all of this. And then he went back to work, because that's what a coach does. You got to make those plays. Can't be distracted. Elsewhere, Wardlow and Jake Hager, they brawled into a meat locker, and Wardlow grabbed an icicle. He grabbed a giant icicle, tried to stab Hager with it. He tried to shank him. That's what he tried to do. So they eventually fought out of the meat locker. Wardlow speared Hager through a wall into the kitchen area. Now we cut to Sammy Hager. Or Sammy Guevara, I should say. Sammy Hager was not on this show. He was not part of Stadium Stampede, although I'm sure Chris Jericho wishes he was. Sammy Guevara finds Sean Spears in a room filled with chairs. This is where they store all of the chairs. Sean Spears is the chairman, right? That's what he calls himself. He's the chairman of AEW. So they start throwing chairs at each other. Anyway, moving on. I was more interested in this. This probably was, it was one of the best parts, if not the best part of this whole presentation. They cut to a bar and lounge or a bar and dance club area on the club level at TIAA Field. Music's playing in the background. You got people sitting at tables. You had, stage with music. Santana and Ortiz come strolling in. They're looking for FTR and Tully, who were just hanging out. They're at the club. Tully Blanchard, 67 years old, right? Hanging out with FTR at the club. This was definitely not the type of music I would expect Tully Blanchard to be hanging out listening to. But there they are. And they all take beer bottles to the heads of various clubgoers as they make their way towards each other. Santana and Ortiz, they're just grabbing beer bottles and hitting these nameless, faceless people with them, smashing bottles over their head. Finally, they all come together at this table. And they share a drink. They actually took a pause before they beat the hell out of each other. And I guess out of respect, they shared a drink with each other before they went to war. Then they got into their bar fight. But we got a great cameo in here from DJ Conan. They zoomed in on the DJ, and it was, in fact, Conan. And you know what? It was good to see him because I know he had COVID, and he was in real bad shape, apparently, for a while. And still, he's probably still not in great health, but he was well enough to be part of this. Remember, he had a kidney issue in the past. He had a kidney transplant. I believe Conan is going to need another kidney transplant in the future, so him getting COVID is more serious than it would be for the average person. So I was glad to see him doing better. It was a funny moment. And it's not the first time we've seen him make a cameo, right? Didn't we have that once? The skit when the Inner Circle was celebrating in Vegas last year. Didn't Conan make a cameo there too? So it was good to see him. And that was a funny moment. I like that. Cash Wheeler was throwing beer bottles at Ortiz. Santana came over to make the save, and he and Wheeler brawled into the elevator when the doors opened, and then the doors closed. So, cut to the next scene, right? Because we don't know where the fuck those guys are going, so we cut to the next scene. Cut back to Hager and Wardlow in the Jaguars, equipment area, somewhere in the back. There's all the equipment is being stored there. Hager chokeslam Wardlow off of what looked like a golf cart or some kind of vehicle down through some wooden pallets. Back to MJF and Jericho. Jericho hit him with a... Jericho hit MJF with a Shad Khan cardboard cutout. It's kind of odd that they would even have such a thing. I was asking myself, I wonder, do they have Vince McMahon cardboard cutouts in Titan Tower? Because if they don't, they probably will after this. There's Shad Khan, just right there. I wonder if they have Tony Khan cardboard cutouts. It's fucking weird, no? Anyway, I thought that was strange. Into the conference room they go. They go into the conference room. Jericho uses a stapler on MJF's head. He staples a piece of paper to his head. MJF comes back with a pile driver onto the conference room table, and he goes for the cover, only gets two. MJF grabs a claw hammer, but Jericho whacks him in the head with a small trash can, one of these plastic trash cans they have. Jericho grabs an aluminum baseball bat, whacks MJF with it, throws him through a glass window, one of the office doors. So he goes through the window. He comes up bleeding. So now MJF is cut open. Cut back to Sean Spears, who is being chased by what Excalibur called the Inner Circle Motorcycle Club. I have no idea what that was all about. And finally, Jericho and MJF battle into Daly's place in front of the live crowd. MJF is just a bloody mess. Sammy Guevara now is chasing down Sean Spears with a golf cart into Daly's place. He actually mowed him down with it. So this time it was Sammy in the driver's seat, as opposed to what happened to poor Sammy the last time he got chased down by a golf cart. So they end up in the ring. It ends up one-on-one in the ring, Sean Spears and Sammy Guevara. And Sean Spears takes a chair, and he delivers a vicious chair shot to Sammy Guevara, right in the head. And he goes for the pin, Sammy kicks out. At this point, honestly, I mean, it's a fun match, but I am begging for this thing to end so I can come on the air live and just get this review done. I'm like, please, please end this. Sammy hits his GTH, and he curb stomps Spears into the chair that Spears himself had wedged in between the turnbuckles, the first, or rather the bottom rope and the middle rope. Curb stomps him right into it. Sammy goes up to the top, hits the 630 senton, and gets the pin to win the stadium stampede for the Inner Circle. They are now one win apiece. You know what that means. One more match. They got to do one more match. Now, they've already done Blood and Guts, and now they've done Stadium Stampede. What's left? What other stipulation could they do? Or are they not going to do a third match? Are they just going to leave well enough alone 50-50 and just move on? Or maybe they build to Jericho and MJF one-on-one and they don't do a tag match. But it would seem to me that you would want to build to the rubber match between these two groups. I'm just kind of at a loss as far as what that stipulation would be. I thought it was fun. I think I enjoyed this more. I did enjoy this more than I did the Stadium Stampede last year. I like this more. I like the way it was shot. Some of the more comedic moments, or like the Conan thing and some of the other stuff they did. I just enjoyed this more than last year. Was not a fan of, again, how long it went. That was one of my kind of critiques of some of the matches on this show. Fucking long match, but again, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun for what it was. And when I look at the pay-per-view top to bottom, you know, the Cody match did nothing for me. That really was a mark on the show. The women's title match during the pay-per-view did not impress me at all. Although I was happy to see Britt Baker get her moment, I thought the women's title match on the pre-show was much better. So there were a few moments like that. There was nothing horrendously bad on the show. And the really good stuff on the show was great. There was some excellent stuff on the show. And you know what? It was just fucking great to be back in front of a loud crowd. It just changes the entire atmosphere of the show. And it'll be the same thing with WWE in July when they get back in front of people as well. It's not just an AEW thing, although it is more fun in AEW when they spring for the rights to some of these theme music, some of the theme songs for some of these guys. But WWE, they'll have their honeymoon period too when they come back in front of live crowds. It just adds a whole other element to the show. And I am so happy that we are finally getting back to that. We're finally getting back to the way things are supposed to be. And we're going to find out who's really over and who's not. Because the crowd is what dictates who's over and who's not. Not some people who think they know who's over. It's you. It's me. It's the people who pay to go to these events and sit in the crowd and cheer and boo. And now we are finally getting that back, and it feels oh so good. So I want to hear from you what you thought of this pay-per-view. You can do so by going on Twitter and voting in the poll. Want to check right now and see what the results are? So far, we've got over 1,600 votes in, and there it is, 80% thumbs up, about 13% thumbs in the middle, and only 7% thumbs down. So people seem pretty happy overall with this pay-per-view. You know, again, not a perfect show, but on the whole, very fun, very long, but a very fun show. Let us switch over, because I want to hear from you guys what you thought of the pay-per-view tonight. Got a lot of super chats here to get through, which is never a bad thing. And if you do send in a super chat, however much it may be for, you are supporting the channel when you do so. So I want to thank you all for your support. I want to thank you all for staying up late with me. I shouldn't say that. I didn't expect the pay-per-view to go off that late. That usually is the way it works with the AEW shows. The thing with the AEW, WWE does pay-per-views every month, right? So they have 12 shows a year. They used to have 16. They had as many as 16 pay-per-views a year at one point. Thankfully, they don't have that many of them anymore, unless you count the Saudi Arabia shows they do twice a year usually. But AEW has 4 pay-per-views. That's it. 1 per quarter. February, May, September, and November. So it's understandable that they want to get a lot of people on the show, build up a big card, and the card may go 3.5 hours, 4 hours. So, you know, I get it. They don't have as many shows, and they want to make them feel special. So that's why they do what they do. Manny D, thank you for that $2 super chat. You were the first person earlier tonight, so I thank you. Shrey in the chat says, stop the steal. You guys are too much. You guys are too much. Spanish Goddess, Leo Rush is so whack. All right, so he is not a fan of Leo Rush being the mystery entrant tonight. Jimmy White with the $5 super chat. With Britt being the champion, buy or sell on her having a few promos of her with the title in her dentist office dealing with patients. You mean like have the belt like on the mantle behind her or something like that? Or as the patient is in the chair, like in agonizing pain with no Novocaine, she's going on about her big win over Sheeta. I wouldn't want to be the person in the chair, but yeah, sure, why not? That could be entertaining. Chase Wood with the $10 super chat. Great show tonight. Crowd made this show feel so special. Loved every minute of it. Vitamin Vision with the $20. What's going on, Vitamin Vision? Double or Nothing was better than both nights of WrestleMania. Okay, look at that. Some high praise there from Vitamin Vision TV. Jacob Donnelly with the $5. Besides the terrible Cody match, I'd put this up there with Revolution 2020. As one of AEW's best shows. Top to bottom, a lot of great stuff. Skull Dipper with the $15. Felt so great hearing real fans again. The triple threat was epic. Overall, fun show. Oz and Glorious. Words cannot describe how awful QT Marshall and his band of merry clowns is. I can't believe these guys get so much screen time. Great show. Otherwise, well, they get the screen time because of Cody. Is it really all that shocking? Cody wants to work with his guys. These are Nightmare Factory people, so they're going to get on TV. These are Cody's buddies. What do you expect? Magician Sapphire, happy Memorial Day. Double or Nothing was a blast. Oz and Glorious, huge shout out to the massive WWE troll Bliss fan who is trying to ruin the chat for everyone. You've met Bliss fan too, I see. Brianna, I'm just surprised Mark Henry wasn't wearing a pink salmon jacket. Well, give it time. There's still time. Tap out Nick. Serena Deeb is a ring general. Yes, she is. Serena Deeb is quite great. Lou Rivera, I just left Cinemark Theater. That was a great experience. I hope they do that for every pay-per-view. And he says, hi, Ken terminated by DQ. #ManCrushSunday. Yeah, I heard that AEW in some cities was airing the pay-per-view in movie theaters, in some Cinemark theaters. So if anybody listening to this happened to stroll on into one, let me know what that experience was like. I have not been in a movie theater in... How long has it been since I've been in a movie theater? Even before the pandemic, I just got tired of people shit. You know, dealing with... I just can't deal with people. So, yeah. Unfortunately, they act like a bunch of dicks usually in these movie theaters that I end up in. It's probably been about 2.5 years since I've been to a movie theater. Dry chicken without flavor. Double or Nothing was a fun show. Tonight, it was great seeing the live crowd in full capacity. Brian Becerra with the $15. Did not watch Double or Nothing. I did listen to your Warrior Dark Side of the Ring review and enjoyed it very much. Well, thank you. I watched A&E, not the other one. I watched Broken Skull Sessions with Godfather. It was good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that tomorrow. I'm happy because in one of the clips that WWE put on its YouTube channel, they did talk to Godfather, Austin did, about him almost bringing Papa Shango back in 1997. And they had the picture of him in the Papa Shango, the updated Papa Shango gear. I got to tell you, it looks fucking awesome. And I've seen that picture before, but he was talking about how he really got in good shape and he slimmed down to like, you know, 285 or something. It was this new makeup that Jerry Lawler did for him. Like, the look was fucking awesome. And then I think about what they did with him. They brought him back to be Kama, you know, in the Nation of Domination. And it's like, hey, you know what? We could have gotten an updated, less cartoonish version of Papa Shango. He would have fit right in with, like, the Ministry or something. Now I'm fucking pissed that we didn't get it. So I want to hear him talk more about that. Brian Becerra, I mentioned Brian, so thank you again. TH Revolution with the $20 super chat. Fantastic show from top to bottom. Honestly believe this may have been AEW's best pay-per-view. Only issue I had was the Agogo match went too long and Cody winning was the wrong result. Cody has won too many of his feuds. Ghostros123 with the $5 super chat. Thank you, Ghostros. Appreciate it. Darlene Bimbai with $5. Absolutely love this show. Only downside for me was the Cody versus Agogo match, which did not need to be on the show, in my opinion. Now, it could have been on Dynamite. You're right. I said it was a TV match through and through. Nothing more, nothing less. Definitely not a pay-per-view worthy match. Richie Rich. 365 with the $50 super chat drop. Wow, Richie. Richie Rich. He's showing off here tonight. When do you think you'll win the world championship? And if never, then why not? Well, I almost won the world championship tonight, were it not for that fucking douche, Don Callis. I came this close. I'll have my day. My day will come. EJ Slemp. Fun show tonight. Two questions. Is the ExpressVPN offer still available? And is the infamous Michael Jackson death coverage rant available for members? The ExpressVPN offer is absolutely still valid. In fact, I'm going to be talking about them again in the next couple of weeks. So all you got to do is go to expressvpn.com/Solomonster. That's it. Go to that link. Go to that link. And you can sign up for the 12-month package, and you can get 3 free months tacked on to your membership. It's worth it, I'm telling you. VPN is the way to go. It's a lot of good uses for VPN, security purposes, as well as other things that VPNs can be very useful for. So definitely take advantage. ExpressVPN.com/Solomonster. The Michael Jackson death coverage is not up yet in the members-only section. I'm gradually getting to everything, and that was episode 75. So that is a ways off, although you can find that one, though, elsewhere. That one was a special upload I did not too long ago, so if you look hard enough, you can find it, though. Magician Sapphire, as much as I love and respect Cody, he is starting to generate King Corbin levels of go-away heat, or maybe I am exaggerating. He is not King Corbin with me yet. Wow, that is quite the insult, comparing Cody to King Corbin. But he's slowly getting there, I will say. He is slowly getting there. Rodimus Prime with the $40. Thank you, Rodimus. Awesome show tonight. What match tonight was your favorite? What match was my favorite? That's a good question. What match did I enjoy the most? I really enjoyed the Sting and Darby match, but I liked the main event too. I liked the Stadium Stampede match. I thought it was fun. The women's, yeah, NWA women's title match on the pre-show was excellent. If I had to narrow it down to one, though, that's tough. I might actually go with the main event. I might go with the main event or Sting and Darby. It's probably one of those two. Dry Chicken, it's crazy that the facts that Leo Rush and Mark Henry were in the city. You know, that's a great point. I had not thought of that. That is a great point. I did not even put that together. Leo Rush and Mark Henry in the same building on the same night at Double or Nothing. Remember, they had that issue with each other. They were sending comments and, you know, verbal jousting going on between the two of them. I think Mark Henry at one point, didn't he threaten to sue Leo Rush or something for defamation? And there they were in the same. Maybe we just found out what Mark Henry's match is going to be in AEW. It's going to be Mark Henry against Leo Rush. I don't have a good feeling about Leo Rush if he ends up in the ring with Mark Henry. Edwin Cardenas, thank you for becoming a Sound Off superstar. We do have channel memberships open, by the way. He was talking a little while ago about the retro audio. That's one of the perks you get if you're on the top tier. But I'm going to be working on another members-only Q&A this week. In fact, if you are a channel member, good moment for me to remind you, check the community tab on the channel. I put a post up earlier today. Leave your question in the comment section, and I will try to get to it when I do the Q&A video later this week. That's members only. So I'm going to be doing another video there. And there's some other cool stuff I got planned. So if you want to look into channel memberships, just click the join button down below this video. It'll give you all the information you need. So Edwin, thank you for becoming a member. Eric Fisher, this is a win for wrestling as we are getting back to normal. Good to see fans having fun, and the Inner Circle winning is a good way to send the fans home happy. Dried Chicken Without Flavor. Last super chat for tonight. Do you see Ty Conti going after the AEW women's title at Full Gear? By the way, congrats to Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. I don't know about Full Gear, but I do think that she's probably got a championship in her future. She's very good. Every time I see her, I feel like she's getting a little bit better and a little bit better. I don't know if it's going to be Full Gear, but do I see her becoming the women's champion at some point? If not this year, maybe next year? Yeah, absolutely. At some point, she will. T-Mac, 034, thank you for the $5. I went to both nights of WrestleMania 37, and I am biased to WWE, but from even watching this at home tonight, I like Double or Nothing more than night one of WrestleMania, which was my favorite night. That's the second person who said they enjoyed this show more than at least one, if not both, of the nights of WrestleMania. Professor John Gotti, again, I got to thank you, brother, for that $200 bomb. You are the man. Nothing more needs to be said. I always love how there's never a message with it. He just wants to just show his support. It's awesome. Jared M., fantastic show tonight. So obviously he loved the pay-per-view. Thank you for the $60. Hope you're doing well. Happy Memorial Day to you. Ace of Masta with the $10 as Nakamura dances there. Thank you for leaving, Shinsuke. Jungle Boy Jack Perry. That was his whole message. Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Professor dropped another $100. Crazy, crazy. Mr. Wombat with the $10. Anybody cool with Britt as champion needs to keep that same energy when Eva Marie wins a women's championship. I would not compare Eva Marie with Britt Baker. Eva Marie is not winning a championship. I don't believe Eva Marie is even going to wrestle. I believe Eva Marie is going to be a manager. So, not that she can't wrestle at some point. I don't think that's the plan. Although right now, I don't know what she's doing. She's in these vignettes every week, and she's talking about evolution. Like she's fucking Motorhead or something. Evolution. My evolution. Ryan spies, if Leo Rush gets signed, that's another future world champion for them, in my opinion. And he says, best friend should beat the Bucks. No, I disagree. I don't like that idea. Not a fan. Santana and Ortiz, I can get behind that. Lucha Bros, I can get behind that. Best friends, I'm not feeling it. Vash, thank you for the $5. Rainmaker, thank you for the sub. Welcome to the family. Vash says, you mentioned Mark Henry wants to get back in the ring, and my mind immediately flashes over to Hobbs. Do you think that could be a good match? Yeah, good big man match. I could see that. Will Hobbs, Powerhouse Hobbs. It's in his name, right? World's Strongest Man against Powerhouse Hobbs. I could see that. Naif Alsafar, thank you for the $9.99. Vincent Millage. Boy, Nakamura is having a fun time tonight, right? Every time we get a new subscriber, Nakamura does a dance. Right on my super chats. Right when I go to read them. Vincent Millage, there was a part of me that wanted Tim Tebow to come in with a chair and hit Chris with it for MJF to pin him. Well, that would have gotten some major heat. Brett Lewis Lane, by the way, former New York Met Tim Tebow. Don't forget. Brett Lewis Lane, thank you for the $5. Stephen Chappa with the $50. Super chat drop. He says $50 to the man with the exceptional podcast. Take the extra 1 cent I didn't get to give the other day. Well, thank you. Thank you, Steven. PB with that $100 drop I mentioned earlier. James Gruesome. What a name. Holy shit, what a fucking name. James Gruesome with the Gruesome $5 super chat. Yukiora, there's Nakamura again. Jebediah, thank you for subscribing to the channel. We're picking up some subs tonight. I like it. It's what I like to see. Spread the word, by the way. If you've got friends who are wrestling fans who are looking for a podcast or a YouTube channel to tune into, let them know about the channel. Tell them to come on over. Yukio, thank you for the $35. Haven't been able to be here live in a while, but I always listen at work. Great show overall. Keep up the great work, Solomonster. I will do so. Food Hive. Late to the party, but Food Hive has arrived. So happy to see how over Max Caster was tonight. I love this company. Dr. NXT Scorpio. Thought this show was good tonight overall. I enjoyed it. Besides the Cody match, can't wait to watch Raw tomorrow. Did you like my Paul Heyman soundbite that I opened the podcast today with, episode 706? It's like literally the first like 8 seconds of the show. It was from Talking Smack this week. I'm gonna make good use of that soundbite going forward. It was basically Paul Heyman having a conversation with Kayla Braxton, where he asked Kayla if she watched or if she watches Raw. And then she asked him, well, do you watch Raw? And his response was to laugh and say, of course I didn't watch Raw. Why would I watch Raw? I'm like, I got to open the show with that. Like that perfectly, I mean, I could not come up with a better soundbite than that. I might actually open the Raw review with that soundbite every week going forward. Fucking great. And Quintus Brown. Great show tonight. What's next for Lance Archer? I have to assume a rematch with Miro. And once he loses again, I don't know what's in his immediate future. I don't know that he and Jake Roberts are going to be a long-term combo. I don't know that he needs Jake. He doesn't need him. So I could see him breaking away from Jake. What Archer goes on to do? See, that's not clear to me. I guess my fear for him is that he ends up kind of like last time where they don't really know what to do with him and he ends up not being on TV for weeks on end, which would not be good for Lance Archer. I don't know. I don't know where he really fits into right now unless they kind of link him up with somebody as a tag team. Maybe he goes for the tag team titles. I mean, that might work better for him. But it's not really clear to me that they have any real, unfortunately, that they have any real plans for him at this point. So I think we're all caught up now on your super chats. Got to thank you again. You guys are amazing with all of the support tonight. I forgot to mention the rundown for Dynamite this Friday. Dynamite is not airing on Wednesday. Unfortunately, it is preempted again this week, so there will be no Dynamite. There will be no Dynamite stream here on the channel on Wednesday. There will be no Dynamite stream at all, because my current plan is to just wait at that point. The show airs on Friday night, 10 p.m. I'll probably just give my thoughts on the podcast next Sunday, episode 707. The lineup, though, looks like this. Dustin Rhodes against Nick Camarado in a bull rope match after what happened tonight. Young Bucks against Pac and Penta El Cero Miedo. Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson against QT Marshall and Anthony Ogogo. And a Dr. Britt Baker DMD championship celebration. So that is your Dynamite preview for this Friday. In case you missed the announcement that they are going to be preempted, unfortunately, yet again. Depending on how the NBA schedule goes, they may end up being preempted for almost the entire month of June, which kind of screws up my whole schedule as well. So we'll see how the NBA stuff shakes out, and I'll keep you guys posted on what the plans are here on this channel. By the way, if you missed it, not only are you getting a Dynamite or a... I did it again. Look at that. I called it Dynamite. Double or nothing. Not only are you getting a Double or Nothing stream tonight, but right before the pay-per-view, I uploaded over an hour of audio right here to the YouTube channel. There's the thumbnail. The man behind The Ultimate Warrior. It did a double review of the Dark Side of the Ring episode and the A&E biography on The Warrior. I gave my thoughts, which one I thought was better, and a whole bunch of stuff that they left out. Some very interesting stuff that you may not have been aware of that was not covered on either episode. So when we're done here, or at some point tomorrow, maybe if you're enjoying your day off, you've got over an hour of audio right here on YouTube that you can check out talking all Ultimate Warrior stuff. This stream is the third podcast I've done today. I was doing the podcast at 9 o'clock this morning, and I'm still podcasting here at almost 2 o'clock in the morning. And I feel like I'm about to collapse. But you guys make it all worth it. So, again, I appreciate everybody who stayed up late with me tonight. This was awesome. We still got almost 1,200 people here. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning. So, as we wrap things up and wind down here, if you got any questions in the chat, let's see what's going on in the chat here. Was Mark Henry supposed to be a big surprise? Yes. He was saved as a surprise. I didn't hear his name mentioned at all coming into the show. That was one of the surprises, though, that Tony Khan was kind of teasing earlier in the week. Yeah, Beowulf says he doesn't really see where Lance Archer fits in these next 2 or 3 months. It's hard for me to kind of picture where he ends up once he's done with Miro. It's not really obvious. Maybe he goes heel again and, you know, they do something lesser with him. He's not going to be challenging for a championship unless he links up with somebody and goes for the tag belts. I just don't see it. Hardys, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Bliss fan wants to know, I wonder when The Fiend will come back. I'm at the point where I really don't give a shit when The Fiend comes back, Bliss fan. Sad to say, I used to be a big fan of The Fiend character, but they ran that into the ground. I don't really care if he ever comes back now. Miro had to win. Why drop the title after 2 weeks? Lance should aim for Omega. Yeah, the problem is, if he aims for Omega, it's a one and done. Yeah, I don't really see that being an extended program or a pay-per-view main event, so you can get a Dynamite match out of it maybe, but then what, right? After he loses again, then what? The problem is, he needs somebody where he can win. He can't just keep losing to people. So who can you put him with that he can defeat who isn't just some random scrub? Who can he be programmed with where he can pick up some wins? That's the question that you need to ask. The comedic genius just became a member. Thank you, comedic genius. They killed the fiend, says Turtleheads. It's sad. It was a very unique act at one point. I was very excited when he first debuted, and that first entrance at SummerSlam against Balor, holy shit. I mean, that was very well done, and it was a slow thing, but, you know, we got to the point now where, I mean, does anybody really get excited by the Fiend or the idea of the Fiend coming back? I mean, really, honestly, is anybody, like Bliss fan in the chat, are you truly excited about the possibility of the Fiend making this big comeback? Forget the Alexa Bliss connection. Are you excited by the Fiend coming back? I don't really get the sense that anybody is overly excited about that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, other people agree with me. Dr. NXT Scorpio says, get some sleep, Solomonster. I'm about to. Don't worry. I was going to wake up early in the morning to get some more work done, but we'll see how that works out. I have my alarm set for 6:45. I might have to adjust that. The work never ends. That's the problem. The work never ends. Food Hive says there had to be a Sunday dinner tonight. Indeed, there was. Tried something a little bit different from Amazon. Fresh Direct. Some baby back ribs in the slow cooker. Turned out real good. Barbecue. Treated myself tonight. Figured we can't just do cereal. We have to do something special. So we ate well tonight. Comedic genius, I was a member of yours, but I don't know what happened. LOL. Well, that is strange. Well, I'll welcome you anyway. I will welcome you and thank you for being a member regardless. Fiend should never have lost at WrestleMania in any circumstance, says Bliss fan. Yeah, I mean, I said that going into WrestleMania. And there were all these stories about, well, he lost because he was taking time off. And, you know, he was still affected by the death of Brody Lee. But, you know, then Fightful turned around and said that there was no truth to any of that. You know, he seemed fine when he was there. And in fact, he wants to be back on TV. So, who knows? Who knows what's going on? It's probably just a matter of creative not knowing what the fuck to do with him. And they really, really like the work that Alexa Bliss is doing. And they're just dragging this out. The problem is when you drag it out and there's no real payoff to what they're doing, people get bored of it. And when they're back in front of crowds in the next 6 to 8 weeks, all this magic shit that they're doing on TV, all these special effects, you're not going to be able to get away with a lot of that stuff in front of a live audience. So something is going to have to change with the Alexa stuff in these next 6 weeks. Seems like they're building to something with her and Shayna Baszler. So they got to move that along, whatever it is. They just have to move on to whatever it is that they're going to do. Just get to it already. Quintus Brown, any chance of you going to Chicago for All Out? No plans. No plans on traveling anywhere soon, but I could always be convinced. So, not opposed to the idea, but right now I got nothing planned. No, Thunder Rosa is not contracted to AEW. She's still under contract until the end of the year, to the NWA. At which point, I honestly would expect her to probably go sign with AEW. That would be my expectation. Double Shot Jake wants to know with his $2 super chat, do you think Samoa Joe will come to AEW? You know, if they would have previewed the fact that they were going to make some kind of announcement tonight about a new analyst coming in and it's like a big name, he's the first name I would have thought of. So I'm actually really glad that they didn't do that. Because I would have been very upset if I would have gotten my hopes up for Samoa Joe, and here comes Mark Henry. I would have thought that it was going to end up being Samoa Joe. Yeah, he was doing commentary in WWE before he left or got fired. Do I think that he will come to AEW? I do at some point think that's where he's going to end up. And I don't know what his thoughts are as far as announcing or wrestling or what his health status is and the concussions and everything. But, you know, Samoa Joe deserves one last run before it's all said and done for him. And I think him and AEW cutting promos, he'd come in and automatically become easily top three promo in the company. So I hope he ends up in AEW. And I'm not big on just sending all these ex-WWE guys to AEW. But if I was going to pick one right now, not named Daniel Bryan, it would be Samoa Joe. HBKC83, I don't know, but what if down the road Archer replaces Cage and Team Taz? A face Cage and a heel Archer feud? Yeah, maybe. They could do that. Clearly, they're building to some kind of a split in Team Taz, so I could see that happening. Ditch one guy, bring in another. Off Leather Wings, Jericho said his Mount Rushmore of people to work with are Shawn Michaels, Rock, Mysterio, and Moxley. Do you agree? I mean, in terms of his best opponents, no. I don't agree. I agree with Shawn Michaels. I agree with Rey Mysterio. Benoit belongs on there. I know why he probably wouldn't say that, but Benoit belongs on that list. Yeah, Rock. Yeah, I mean, I think I might agree with all of those names except for Moxley. I would replace Moxley with Benoit. But again, I know why he wouldn't say that publicly. Tamara with the buzzer beater super chat. Thank you, Tamara. You didn't have to do that. I appreciate that. And there's Edwin. So I'm guessing AEW forgot about the Lance Archer and Sting thing. Yeah, apparently that went away. I guess he got tired of interrupting Sting promos. He had to move on to something else. That was kind of dropped out of nowhere. You do raise a very good point. That really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. How many times can you interrupt one guy during his promo? I mean, eventually it gets fucking old. You got to move on to something else. I guess they got bored. Matt McClure with the 10 bucks. Can't stand Omega. Great wrestling is only half the reason I love wrestling. I need good characters, and Kenny is just weird. It's strange, and I miss Moxley or Jericho as champion. Omega does not work for me. Omega is a very weird guy. He is not the kind of promo that Jericho is or Moxley. He's just not as good verbally in the promo department. He has his moments. He's had some gems here and there. But like his promo style, his way of speaking, it is very strange. He is not my favorite. But apparently you can't say that. Because if you do, like poor Jim Ross, people will jump down your throat. So you have to be very careful when you speak ill of Kenny Omega. Well, they'll all gang up on you and they'll attack you. They'll all bite your ankles. Pedro Velasquez, HBK is one of my favorite wrestlers. Who is yours? Shawn Michaels. Or, not Shawn Michaels. Bret Hart. Yours is Shawn Michaels. Mine is Bret Hart. Bret Hart is the man. Savoy, thank you for becoming a Sound of Legend, man. Top tier. That's our $9.99 tier. Thank you, sir. Mitch wants to know, how about a trio of Archer, Sting, and Darby? Not necessary. It's not needed. I wouldn't do that. Why is the TNA belt still a thing after Moose lost it? That's a very good question. I don't have an answer for you, but that is a very good question. Verbal Souls with the $5. Buy or sell? New Japan Kenny or AEW Kenny? In my opinion, Kenny has not set the world on fire like he did in New Japan. Just a meh champion so far. I mean, look, he's had some. I mean, tonight he had an excellent match tonight. But if I have to compare the two, to me, I mean, it's a no contest. It's New Japan Kenny Omega, the cleaner, bar none, hands down. I'm going with New Japan Kenny all day long. Yeah, Bearwolf, I think AEW will have trios titles before this year is over. I said that months ago. I mean, they have so many trios and groups in the company. It only makes sense. I think trios belts would work. So I think we are gonna get them. Dr. NXT Scorpio, speaking of Omega, I remember during the New Year stream, I think it was someone said Kenny Omega is the best of all time on the mic. Well, in their defense, it was New Year's. They were probably blitzed out of their mind. They were drinking a little bit of the bubbly. That probably would cause them to say something like that, so I can give them a pass. Because I don't see how anybody who is sober would say that with a straight face. Well, listen, guys, this has been fun. And a lot of good questions here, a lot of good comments. I'm going to head on out of here because I'm exhausted and I still have to do a little bit of editing here before I head out. But not before Food Hive drops another super chat. I can't believe you said my name right. Savoy is my first name. I was trying to get my membership on the Food Hive channel, but my badge doesn't show. Ah, okay. So you are Savoy. Interesting. Well, I got you signed up here, so you don't have to worry about it. You're all signed up on the membership tier. It's all good. It's all good, my friend. Enigmatic says, don't go. What do you want? You want a 12-hour overnight stream? Is that what we're doing here? Should I get my pillow? I got a pillow behind me. We pull an all-nighter here? Is that what you want? You guys got to go to bed. Someone wants a hot tub stream. Well, that is definitely not happening. I'm going to spare you. Although, from what I understand, all these people who do hot tub streams on Twitch are apparently making thousands of dollars a night. I think I'm going to pass on the hot tub stream. Verbal Soul says, buy or sell Jeff Jarrett's early TNA Reign of Terror or Triple H's Reign of Terror. Well, I was a WWE fan, not really a TNA fan at that point, so I guess by default I'll have to go with Triple H. But I wasn't a fan of either one of those things. Not a fan. Remember when Stone Cold said, we don't need no stinking badges to Kurt Angle when he was dressed as a cowboy? Yes, I do. That was one of the highlights of that heel turn. Was the great comedy that we got that summer when Austin was hurt. He got hurt. He couldn't wrestle for a while, so we got some comedy gold with him and Kurt Angle on SmackDown. 24-hour stream challenge. Man, you know, College Solomonster could probably pull it off. You know, the weird thing is about that, I would be up sometimes for like these 24-hour all-nighters. I'd be working on a project or something. And it was the weirdest thing because it would be morning and I hadn't slept and I was like a ball of energy. It was almost like I felt reinvigorated. I'm like, man, I feel great. And I didn't drink any coffee or caffeine or anything like that. And then by like the middle of the day, I physically couldn't even keep my eyes open. I just couldn't do it. Like, I crashed. So I was like, man, this isn't too bad. And then it was like, oh, fuck my life. Like, it turns that quickly. And, yeah, I don't think I could do that again. Matt McClure says, get Cody back in the main event. Watch Cody obliterate Omega on the mic. Oh, hey, Cody is a much better promo than Omega is. I don't think anybody is doubting that. But remember, Cody is not allowed to challenge for the championship. So they're going to have to figure out a storyline explanation if they want to put him in there against Kenny Omega. But I don't think he's challenging for the title anytime soon. He will. I mean, everybody knows he will at some point, but no, I don't see him challenging for the belt for a very long time. Yes, Tino, I almost won tonight. I fell just a little bit short. I came close though. It's all right. I don't need Kenny's belt. I got my belts behind me over my shoulder. It's all good. All right, guys. Please check out the Ultimate Warrior review video. Again, over an hour of audio that I recorded this afternoon. Check out episode 707 of the Sound Off. I covered a whole bunch of different topics. You'll see some of those clips hitting the channel tomorrow. Talking about John Cena, or John China, I should say. Some SummerSlam news. Just a whole bunch of stuff. WWE and New Japan. Fact and fiction. What's really going on there? What does Daniel Bryan have to do with it? We're going to talk about that as well. So if you didn't hear the full podcast earlier, please do so. It's already pushed out to Apple, Spotify, all the usual platforms. And thank you again for all your support tonight, man. It's crazy how many people came out. I love hearing from you guys. Be well. Stay safe. If you got the day off from work, or if you're hanging out with family today, enjoy the Memorial Day holiday. Eat some good food. I'm going to try to do the same. And we'll be back again. No stream on Wednesday because there's no Dynamite, but I'll keep you guys posted on Twitter what my plans are for that going forward. I hate all of these preemptions. Sucks. But hopefully it won't be preempted for too much longer. All right, I'm out. Have a good one, guys. Take care.